Did you know that our modern holiday of Memorial Day stems from the holiday that was known as Decoration Day? It came about after the Civil War, where veterans and family members would go out and decorate the graves of fallen soldiers.
Welcome to the Lore of the South. Lore of the South.
Welcome back to Lore of the South with me, Kelly Cruz. Thought I'd sneak in a bonus Memorial Day episode for y'all. And in today's history-making news, it comes from a National Park Service. The Battle of Antietam took place on September 17, 1862, and was the bloodiest day in the history of the United States. Over 19,000 men were reported wounded, and more than 4,000 were killed on the battlefield itself. The dead, for the most part, were buried where they laid. Thanks to the battlefield photography of Alexander Gardner, many of the bodies were able to be located and later interred in consecrated graveyards. But not all of the fallen were found and given proper burials. In recent years, at least 5 more Union soldiers have been uncovered, one of whom was of the Irish Brigade, still in possession of his rosary beads, crucifix, and the medal of a saint. So remember the fallen on this Memorial Day, and also remember when visiting these historic sites that those fallen still might be resting under your feet. Memorial Day is a day of remembrance of those members of the military who gave the ultimate sacrifice, both past and present. In today's story, our hero did not die on the battlefield, but he did save a lot of lives. I grew up watching the movie about his life with my dad every year, a movie starring Gary Cooper, playing Sergeant Alvin York from Pall Mall, Tennessee. It's a classic, y'all, and worth a watch. In the film version, York would make a turkey call and pick off Germans one by one, seemingly to sometimes capture hundreds of them single-handedly. So in today's special episode 45, we're going to talk about the true story of Sergeant Alvin Colum York, the conscientious objector turned war hero. Alvin was born December 13, 1887, the third of 11 kids to parents William and Mary York, in a two-room cabin close to Indian Creek in Fentress County, Tennessee. The family was destitute, so much so that Alvin only attended school for about 9 months. He and his brothers were needed at home to help with the farming and hunting to feed the family. The family were what was known or is known as subsistence farmers, and were only able to grow barely enough food to feed themselves year in and year out. Young Alvin was a crack shot, and his skills provided that extra food that was so needed for the family to survive. Then, in November of 1911, William York, Alvin's dad, passed away, leaving Alvin, age 27, the oldest child left at home to provide for his mother and 8 younger siblings. Alvin went to work on the railroad and then as a logger. He was a hard worker and devoted to caring for his family, but he was also a violent alcoholic, known to have gotten into more than one barroom brawl, and he had the arrest record to prove it. Then, sadly, Alvin's best friend was killed in one of these barroom fights. But this ignited a change in Alvin. He joined the Christian Union Church, which shunned all violence and secular politics. And Alvin's days of barroom brawls were over, and all of this was happening just as World War I was breaking out on the continent. The draft was begun June 5, 1917. All men who were between the ages of 21 and 30 were required to register for what was called selective services. York checked the box indicating that he would like to be exempt from the draft. The question then was asked to specify on which grounds would give him the right for the exemption. His reply was, "Don't want to fight." As y'all can imagine, that's not a good enough reason to avoid the draft, and his exemption request was tossed out. He tried for conscientious objector status twice more, and those two were dismissed, even after his preacher gave testimony to Alvin's religious beliefs. But here's the kicker. Alvin's church wasn't one recognized by the government, and that gave cause to toss out his application. Even if the status had been granted, it didn't relieve the draftee of service. It only meant they didn't have to actually go out to fight in the war. He probably would have ended up working in a supply room or driving an ambulance or something like that. So drafted he was, and York reported for duty at Camp Gordon, Georgia in the fall of 1917. He was soon recognized as an expert marksman, but the fact that he tried to avoid the fight followed him to the camp. And the internal conflict was still there too. He was strongly devoted and was a man of peace. Knowing this, the company commander, Major Buxton, spent many an hour with York, exchanging Bible verses with him, trying to help Alvin come to terms with the war he was bound to fight in. Buxton went so far as to grant York a leave so that he may return home to the mountains and maybe even closer to God, and be convinced that this war was a righteous one and he was not turning his back on the good book. The trip did the trick and worked into compelling Alvin York that sometimes one has to put pacifism aside for the greater good. York and his unit arrived in France on June 27, 1918. They were assigned to the Meuse-Argonne Offensive, the largest U.S. operation in the war. It was on October 8th that made the man from northern Tennessee a hero. His unit of 16 men, all non-commissioned officers, were sent on a mission to capture German machine guns. The group of men made it behind enemy lines and soon infiltrated the German headquarters. Here are Corporal York's own words.
"The Germans got us, and they got us right smart. They just stopped us dead in our tracks. Their machine guns were up there on the heights overlooking us and well hidden. And we couldn't tell for certain where their terrible heavy fire was coming from. And I'm telling you, they were shooting straight. Our boys went down like the long grass before the mowing machine at home. Our attack just faded out. And there we were, lying down about halfway across. And those German machine guns and big shells getting us hard."
Out of the 16-man platoon, 6 were now dead, and 3 were wounded and out of action. That left York and 6 fellow soldiers to complete the mission. The small group that was left returned fire, all the while guarding the Germans they had captured upon entering the headquarters. York then took control of one of the German machine guns and proceeded towards the incoming fire and a group of enemy soldiers rushing towards him. This is how he described the scene.
"And those machine guns were spitting fire and cutting down the undergrowth all around me, something awful. And the Germans were yelling orders. You never heard such a racket in all your life. I didn't have time to dodge behind a tree or dive into the brush. As soon as the machine guns opened fire on me, I began to exchange shots with them. There was over 30 of them in continuous action, and all I could do was touch the Germans off just as fast as I could. I was sharpshooting. All the time I kept yelling at them to come down. I didn't want to kill any more than I had to. But it was they or I, and I was giving them the best I had."
The first lieutenant of the German battalion ran onto the battleground along with 5 other soldiers. Lieutenant Vollmer unloaded his sidearm trying to take out York. He never hit him once. He then surrendered to York, fearing any more loss of German lives. York accepted the surrender, and then he and the remaining 6 soldiers in his unit marched 132 German POWs back to the American lines. York, upon his return to the unit, reported to Battalion Brigadier General Lindsay. Upon meeting with York, the general commented,
"Well, York, I hear you captured the whole German army."
To which York replied,
"No, sir. I got only 132.
After the battle, Corporal Alvin York was promoted to sergeant. He received upwards of 50 medals, including the highest honor a living soldier can receive, the Medal of Honor, whose citation read,
"After his platoon suffered heavy casualties and 3 other non-commissioned officers had become casualties, Corporal York assumed command. Fearlessly leading 7 men, he charged with great daring a machine gun nest, which was pouring deadly and incessant fire upon his platoon. In his heroic feat, the machine gun nest was taken, together with four officers, 128 men, and several guns.
York trying to explain how he was able to overcome these odds in such a heroic way, told Lindsay,
"A higher power than man guided and watched over me and told me what to do."
York, you are right.
On April 26, 1919, the Saturday Evening Post, y'all might know the magazine from the famous illustrations done by Norman Rockwell. My grandma had the whole plate collection. Published an article about Sergeant York, and this quiet religious man from the mountains of Tennessee became a household name. He was welcomed back to the U.S. by a parade in his honor organized by a group of Tennesseans living in New York City. He was then given a leave to do a small tour of the Northeast. He was taken to D.C., where he was given a standing ovation by the House of Representatives. He was also greeted by the Secretary of War, who stood in place of President Wilson, who was still in Paris signing the peace accords. After all of the parades were over, Sergeant York reported to Fort Oglethorpe, Georgia, where he was given his discharge from the Army. Alvin returned home in June of 1919 and married his sweetheart Gracie on the 7th. The pair had a week-long honeymoon in Nashville. They went on to have 10 children, only four of whom survived till adulthood. George, the second oldest, passed away as recently as 2018. Alvin dedicated the rest of his life to bringing much-needed resources to his little home on the mountain. He went to the state senate and spoke about having an actual road built up to the mountain community. He sponsored the York Agricultural Institute to educate the boys and girls of the mountain, as he put it. He worked for the CCC and oversaw the construction of the Cumberland Mountain State Park and was its superintendent until 1940. He'd continue to give speeches until he was no longer able when his health began to fail him. Probably his most famous speech was given at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in May of 1941.
"We must fight again. The time is not now ripe, nor will it ever be, to compromise with Hitler or the things he stands for. By our victory in the last war, we won a lease on liberty, not a deed to it. Now, after 23 years, Adolf Hitler tells us that that lease is expiring. And after the manner of all leases, we have the privilege of renewing it or letting it go by default. We are standing at a crossroads of history. The important capitals of the world in a few years will either be Berlin and Moscow or Washington and London. I, for one, prefer Congress and Parliament to Hitler's Reichstag and Stalin's Kremlin. And because we both are time side by side, I know this unknown soldier does too. We owe it to him to renew that lease of liberty he helped us to get."
Alvin York's health began to fail in the early 40s. He battled pneumonia, several strokes, and failing eyesight. He passed away at the age of 76 in the VA hospital in Nashville on September 2, 1964. General Matthew Ridgway spoke at Sergeant York's service on behalf of LBJ. Sergeant Alvin Cullum York was laid to rest in the Wolf River Cemetery in his home mountain town of Pall Mall, Tennessee. Since his death, he has had many places and things named in his honor, from highways to hospitals. The agricultural college he founded in 1926 still serves as the local high school. You can even visit his farm in Pall Mall. It is known as the Sergeant Alvin C. York State Historic Park, so visit if you can. Side notes. I mentioned in the beginning about Gary Cooper and the Sergeant York flick. The real Alvin York was real reluctant to sell the rights of his story to Hollywood, but did so to help his community. The man practiced what he preached. The movie was supposed to have been based on York's own diary, but as Hollywood does, it was heavily embellished in places, and things that Alvin wanted to be spotlighted, like the poverty in rural Tennessee, was completely or nearly completely left out. Special thanks to my Uncle Horace for lending his voice talent for that of Sergeant York. Thank you, Uncle. Talk to you soon. Also, we need to send out congratulations to Christian Jaber from North Carolina. She is the winner of our t-shirt contest. You can be expecting that t-shirt in the mail in just a couple of days, Christian. Thanks for listening. I hope y'all enjoyed your Memorial Day and long weekend. Y'all take a moment to think about those who fought and died for us. Then fire up the barbecue, because that's what they'd want us to do. I hope y'all enjoyed this bonus episode of Lore of the South. Be sure to follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and now TikTok. And if you want to get in touch, you can email the show at loreofthesouth@gmail.com. And with that, we'll talk to y'all later on Lore of the South.